Nope. Seen it. Oh, nah.
Can't find something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream. It's Sky without the dish. Watch unmissable Sky exclusives like The Regime and Netflix too, all over super reliable Sky full fibre broadband. Get Sky Stream, Sky Broadband and Netflix for just €50 a month. Search Sky Stream. Availability subject location. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Stream and broadband sold separately. Further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Orsmond, chatting all things life lessons.
People often say to me when they come to my clinics, and now especially when they come to the hotel, they are like, you know, Ava, you are not the persona you the TV have, you know, made you to be. And actually, sometimes I'm thinking, my God, that's terribly sad that there is that negative. There's some people who absolutely don't like me because what they saw on television.
As ever, it's available on all podcast platforms.
They were O'Driscoll, Forgan, extra man, it's Fitzgerald. Oh, Fitzgerald is cutting back inside! Leinster have another! Darcy, O'Driscoll through the legs, Rob Carney out to Fitzgerald again, step and score!
Hello and welcome to the Left Wing Independent.ie's rugby podcast. I'm Will Slattery and we have an action-packed show for you this week. In part two, we will be joined by Cian Tracy to discuss all the latest rugby news as Graham Rowntree has been named Munster head coach. But first, in part one, we're delighted to be joined by Sean O'Brien, who last week announced his retirement from the game. Sean, really appreciate you joining us. Has it been a strange couple of days since you made the announcement? You know, everyone tweeting about you in almost the past tense, probably a bit like watching your own funeral.
Hopefully not watching my own funeral, but it's kind of been refreshing, to be honest, just to have it out there and kind of know what I'm going to do now, you know, in a month's time or so, that rugby is no more. So it's kind of nice. I'm kind of looking forward to it, even though it'll be, when the time actually comes, it'll be quite strange not going back into pre-season, and I can kick back and have a few more pints and bits and pieces. So it'll be strange, but it'll be nice. I'm looking forward to it.
And is any part of you kind of a bit of fearful or afraid of what the future holds? Like, you've been a pro rugby player for, you know, 15 years. You know, is there a bit of kind of trepidation about taking that next step?
There definitely is. Yeah. Probably more so 6 or 8 months ago, and this kind of when I kind of knew, okay, well, I have to make a decision at some point. I was probably more anxious about it then and a little bit up in the air. But I suppose you bring it back to what you've based your rugby career on, of your work ethic. You know, I've always worked hard. So no matter what I go into, I can always fall back on that alone. And it's never really about getting into a massive big job or anything like that. It was always about, you know, more so self-satisfaction and doing something I enjoy. So whatever that is, whatever I am going to do after playing rugby, I'm definitely going to enjoy it. And if I'm not enjoying it, I won't be doing it. You know, that's probably the thing I've loved about the team environment, is how much fun you have together in a winning changing room, around the environment. So whether that be in a business sense or whatever it may be, I look forward to that. And whatever I get into, hopefully I can, you know, get my head down and be a success.
And Luke, how do you reflect on Sean's career, Luke? You know, you played with him for so many years and for Leinster and Ireland. You know, what are your thoughts?
It's pretty hard to say anything nice about Seanie, to be honest with you. He's a real bollocks. No, look, I think, you know, so all the lovely things being said about Seanie, and, you know, I can only echo them. I would say, you know, for anyone watching Sean's career, I always feel like you could kind of get confused watching Seanie, in that, you know, obviously he's very physical, you know, very fit guy. But I always thought Seanie, and with most of the best players, your Drickos, your Johnny Sextons, your Paul O'Connells, yeah, good, very good athletes, excellent athletes. But I thought their brain was what separated them. I think I put Jamie Heaslip in that category as well. Very smart rugby player, lovely skills. Understood how to use all those things to really make space for himself. I mean, it was amazing how, I always found it amazing how you didn't put two guys on Seanie every time anyway. But the more I played with him, the more I realized he could pick you apart with a pass as well. So great player, had a super career. I think he'll be brilliant at whatever he decides to do next, because he's never, you know, even with all the great things he's achieved, I think his feet have stayed in the ground. So as tough as that was to say anything nice about Shoshone, I think that's probably where I'll have to end it. But I think you'll do great whatever you decide to do next. You're not the worst.
And we might ask you in a little bit about, you know, maybe some of your plans for the future, but maybe look back a little bit first. I don't know if you've, you know, I'm sure you've seen tweets people sending you and looking back at great moments of your career. You know, how proud are you of what you have achieved over the last, you know, 15 or so years?
I know, I definitely, there is a sense of great satisfaction, and I am proud of what I've done, because I probably never expected it, to be honest, or never thought that I would get to where I got to. You know, I kept my head down. I done whatever I could when any game I played, and you know, I am proud of what I've achieved, especially you know, from Tolo and from the rugby club at home. It's always been a big part of me as well. So it's nice to have that satisfaction for people in the area as well. You know, that it can be done. And I hope I've added a lot of value everywhere I went. So yeah, no, I am. I'm extremely proud of what I've achieved.
And Luke, what was your first impression of Sean when you came across him at Leinster?
This should be good.
Who's this mucker? I think all the things I said, I mean, I was probably amazed. I mean, look, he kind of runs with a serious ferocity into things, but he had great touch and skill and timing. You know, so I think anyone who was looking at Shawnee, I mean, how he timed his runs, he was always really good at cruising into nice positions and then really accelerating into stuff. I was really amazed with the smaller details of his game. As you know, look, I think there was lots of guys in Leinster. I'm sure you probably would have learned a bit from the likes of Keith Gleeson, was a very smart rugby player. You know, Shane Jennings around you. Look, you guys would have been competing for a long time. Jamie was there. All these guys. I mean, I think, you know, and I benefited certainly from that in Leinster. Like great coaches, like really good coaches. Like Mike Brewer would have been there when we were there for Shawnee, but you know, Cheka and Knox. Knox, he was a bit mad, but he was still had some great ideas. You know, Alan Gaffney, all these guys. I think we were both very lucky to come in contact and come in at a time in Leinster where there was real change happening and real positive change. And I think while, you know, I would say both of us, and it's probably fair to say, had, you know, a certain amount of ability and probably belief in our own games, even if we didn't know where we were going to get to. Shawnee probably, I felt like I was always destined for great things. but I never think bad of myself. I think we came in at a great time and with great players around us. And I think, you know, it's the same in any business or anything like that. You know, you good, the people around you really help you flourish and make the best of yourself, you know. And I think, you know, looking at Shawnee, I think he did that. And I think we both were a function of the environment that we were in, which was very, very positive in Leinster. We came in at a period where, as I said, a lot of change, a lot of positive change. So I think we benefited from that. You have to be, you know, as much as you have great belief in yourself and your abilities, I think sometimes, like, there's a lot of luck that comes into your life. The more you look at things in your life, and the older I get, the more I think, Jesus, that was really lucky that, you know, I was, you know, say I was very lucky, lovely family, you know, pushed me very hard into lots of things. Great coaches in my Gaelic football, hurling, all the way up, rugby. And I'm sure Shawnee would say the same thing. Like, there's people you come in contact with all the way that change the journey, like change the destination, and change, I think, the ceiling might be even a better word. It raises it for you. The more good people you come in contact with, the bar gets higher for you of where you can reach. And of course, you still have to do the work yourself. But that's probably, sorry, I know I've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but I do feel we were both a bit lucky. But Shawnee, look, super player, yeah. And I think he's achieved loads of great things in his career. And I think very well deserved, because he was a great worker too, you know.
Yeah, Sean, I know you mentioned your debut against Cardiff in your statement when you were retiring. I think you said you were 20 years old. Excuse me. And I was wondering, like, what advice you'd give that 20-year-old player on the bus to his first ever game, now that you've kind of gotten to the end of the journey and you've completed your career. Like, is there anything you go back and you tell yourself just at the start of the journey?
There's probably not, to be fair. I was, I always backed the good things that I was doing at rugby at that stage. I was still obviously learning a lot as a 20-year-old. And as Lukey said, I only said this the other day to someone. It was like we were products, this whole group, myself, Lukey, Johnny, Dave, Keane, all these boys, of such experienced players around us and some brilliant players who had soldiered for so long and were in the trenches for so long. But I think I wouldn't change anything from when I was a young fella. I backed myself, I suppose, as a 20-year-old, and I used my strengths, which were my ball carry at the time and my physicality probably. And I just backed that. And as you get a bit older, you start developing different aspects to your game and start becoming more and more intelligent, and you see things a lot quicker than other people do. And that helps, obviously, with your game. But I just think to enjoy and back yourself, what you're good at. That'd be my advice to a 20-year-old now coming into that system again. Because the rest of it is coachable, and it's about the environment and who you have around you, obviously, of where you go next. But no, just back yourself and just enjoy what you're good at.
When do you think you're playing your best rugby?
I think someone asked me this recently as well, and I taught the Lions Tour in 2017 when I had everything in my game. And it was the first time probably in that environment where I could express everything in the game, whether that be in a poach, whether it be good carries, whether it be my handling. I remember some of the lads after the Crusaders game that we played on that tour. That was my first game playing on that tour, and it was like a test match. But they said to me afterwards, Jesus, I didn't think you could pass like that, or you know, you never passed the ball.
I could have told them that, Shawnee. Yeah.
I didn't need to pass it though. But just a few bits like that. So I actually felt that I was probably the most rounded I've been in 2017. Obviously, 2011 and 12, I was a bit unknown. 11 and 12. 12, I suppose I was injured for the first half, but in the bigger games, I was probably, you know, at my finest point too. But I think 2017 for me was probably some of the best rugby I've ever played.
Yeah, it's funny when that try was just tweeted so much there the other day against the All Blacks in that first test. Like, it is one of the all-time great. It's up there with, like, that Barbarians one from the 70s that they always show. Like,
on the end of everyone else's second good work, yourself and Heaslip are unbelievable poachers. Unbelievable. They've taken two tries for Ireland. Those lads have, like, try machines. Oh, like, there's a reason for that. They're piggybacks is what they are, piggybackers. But in fairness, it's funny because I always think, you know, when you look at yourself, and I think Jamie too, to a certain extent, great readers of the game, you know, because you would have to, because all the forwards, I think people, like, do you remember Joe Schmidt when he came in to Leinster and he started, he'd stop a clip in the first couple of weeks, he'd stop a clip and everybody be looking at the ball going, what's he stopped here for? And he'd point at the other side of the camera going, what the heck are you doing here? And I always thought that Jamie and you were really good at being alive when you're away from the ball, because forwards oftentimes would be ahead of where backs are, anticipating where breaks might happen, anticipating things like that. We see lots of scrum halves doing it. It's very popular in media to see that. But forwards are great at that too. There's a few people who are brilliant at it. I thought you were great at that. For any young player, would you say, I think you were always alive on the pitch. And I think that's why you're on the end of those things. Do you think that was, I always felt it was a strength to you anyway.
You talk about coaches and stuff, but I always remember, Joe in particular saying, like, if you get three touches of a ball within a, like, a period of time, you'll probably score. You will be the one scoring the ball.
It's the old Gary Ella saying.
Yeah.
It was the Ella brothers. Yeah.
It was. And I remember, like, in the early days when we were setting up game plans and stuff, I was carrying an awful lot off maybe first, second phase. But then when it got to fifth phase or sixth phase, I was on the ball again. And I used to try and have, I suppose the one thing I didn't want to do when I was playing the game was not, like, go in and out of the game. I always wanted to try and be involved. But I suppose the other thing was that when he, I suppose, really met us all students of the game, you're starting to think a step or two ahead in training of, okay, I'm carrying here, but in two phases time, I know where that ball is roughly heading and I need to be working towards that way. And it's easier said than done, actually, because even with my coaching I had on, you're trying to tell fellas, you know, get up from this first ruck and you get north straight away and you're going to be in a great place for the break off a second or third phase here. But when you're lying on the ground on your back after carrying a ball, it's hard to register with some people, like, to actually, okay, what's my next job instantly? Not like looking at the ball for two minutes or a minute and then reacting to it. So I think just having Joe there at that time and the coaches that we had and some of the players who were really smart at it as well, like Owen Redden was brilliant at working off the ball into really good places. Lads like that, it brings you to that next level, I think, as well. And obviously I was studying the game a lot at that stage as well, trying to become better. But Yeah, I used to try and get my hands on as get as many touches as I could without being too greedy.
I had noticed that all right on the wing when I was waiting for the ball. It's funny that you say that because I think we were lucky. The likes of Redden was brilliant for like he'd nearly be playing everyone else's game, you know, while the game was going on. And Johnny's a bit like that too, I suppose, as well. So we had guys on the pitch who were great at that too. And in terms of your own kind of career now, and so it's interesting to hear those kind of moments and what you think about your own game. You know, in terms of being a student of the game, and you've done a little bit of coaching, is there anything in the future for you there, do you think, or do you leave that behind? What's your, or are you just going to take a little break and have a think about things? What's a thinking at the moment? Because I feel like you'd be, you know, certainly it'd be a loss for other forwards to not, you know, not hear from you and not get those ideas about how, I mean, how did that guy play the game? Because I do feel there was periods where in your career, you know, where you certainly were, if not the best, one of the top players in the world. You know, I think it'd be a shame if people didn't get to hear from you.
Yeah, no, it's something I really enjoy. I actually do enjoy coaching, even though people probably think I'm a bit grumpy and stuff, but it's when something comes off the weekend that you've planned during the week and that you've executed and you've coached during the week, there's a lot of satisfaction in that. And it's great to see the enjoyment it puts on a team or, you know, a bunch of forwards, for instance. Like last weekend, I was coaching the London Irish amateur team. I've just been giving them a hand probably the last 6 or 7 games. They're in a pretty bad spot, but we won the last game of the season there. But some of the stuff we worked on Tuesday and Thursday, they've done exactly that and scored 4 incredible tries at the weekend. And it's just, you know, it was great to see them enjoying themselves after the game. But I obviously got the kick out of it too, going, right, we coached them this during the week. They executed it and it came off. So they must be doing something right, even at that lower level. But it's something, regardless of what I get into, if it's not in a rugby environment, I will definitely coach. If I'm back home, I'd love to coach my own club again, Tullo. I would love to get involved maybe with like a college set up in terms of like a Kilkenny college or a schools program or something like that. Because I think I could add a lot of value. But you know, that's not for me really to decide. It's for if there was openings in coaching and gaps here and there. But I do enjoy coaching and I do see myself staying involved at some level or capacity going forward.
And of the coaches you've played under, like some of the greats, Joe Schmidt, you know, Michael Checa, you spent a bit of time with Warren Gatland, like, you know, are any of them similar to what you're like as a coach? Like, what kind of coach are you like, do you think?
The funny thing about this is that I probably thought Joe's way of coaching initially was like the dog's bollocks as such. I thought, like, because he was so detailed and his analysis of other teams and his knowledge of other teams was so good that you just stick to his game plan and you win. You win all the time if you execute it properly. But now, just with the way things are, with defences being set, with coaching getting better, with people figuring out, like, you know, how teams attack, it's you need a lot of variation in your game and you need a lot of unstructured rugby now. And that's probably what I've gone towards now. I like having a few set plays in the game, but not many. But it's shape and on structure and attacking from both sides of the ball, wherever it may be on the field. So that's kind of, if I'm coaching, that's what I try and coach. Try and get the ball to space as quickly as possible, wherever that may be in the field. But it depends on the level you're coaching at, obviously, as well. I'm coaching Roslyn Park over here, who are in that one team, and I'm doing their defence with them. And they soak information very, very quickly. And then the likes of the Geese are in London too, which is 3 or 4 divisions down, which you have to be more repetitive with them. Just
get three coaching jobs.
And doing I'm only giving the Geese a hand because I went down one night, Lukey. Genuinely, I went down one night to give them a hand with some D stuff. And I was looking around going, I actually have to give these lads more of a hand because it wasn't great. But
that's typical you. Like, you're now, like, you'll be club treasurer now in a couple of weeks.
Well, no, it's funny. It depends on the hand you're dealt as well, I think, and what players you have available to you to actually put a game plan in place to suit them, not to suit yourself, to suit them, what they're about, and you know, the type of players you have. So it's it definitely would vary.
And in terms of, like, then as a man manager, then, you know, what kind of the coaches you've had, would you say you align with? Obviously, you said the on-field stuff there, the way you want to attack. But then in terms of how dealing with the players on a one-to-one basis of the people you played under, who would you maybe be similar to, do you think?
Decky.
Oh, it wouldn't be Decky anyway. He'd tell you that himself. No, I suppose I'd be pretty direct. I'd be pretty direct as a man manager. And you'd know what I expect from you as a player. But at the same time, I'd like to think I have that empathy and that arm around your shoulder if I get a feeling that there's something not quite right, or you know, that things aren't going that well for you on a human level. But I think being direct with people and just being completely honest and open is the way forward. And I find it suits me best anyway. You have to be aware of your surroundings. I think I've learned that a lot since I came over here, in terms of just different nationalities, different people, different cultures. Where when we were in Leinster, I could say to Lukey on the pitch, I could tell him to F off, or I could say you didn't run the right line there, and he'd take it on board. Lukey'd probably come back with a whole explanation of why he'd done it, but he would acknowledge it at least. And the same would be said for me if Johnny had a go at me, or if Lukey had a go at me. I'd just take it on the chin and go, yeah, I'll move on, and that's it. But that's because we were all from the one area and we all grew up kind of in that environment together. Where when I came over here, it's very different. You have to find out what makes people tick first and foremost, and act accordingly then to that. Because if I went after someone over here, for instance, on the field, you might not get the best out of them. And I suppose that's what it's about, getting the best out of people at the weekend. There's so much to actually coaching, though. It fascinates me a little bit too, because it's actually complex and it's quite hard.
It's funny you mentioned that, you know, the different nationalities and being in a different league. Because I think when Johnny Sexton went to Racing, it was similar. Maybe the way he liked to do things was very different for the French players. So it's kind of giving you a new appreciation of kind of the nuances, as you say, being in a different league with a different team and different environment.
Oh, it definitely has over here. Like, I've such a respect for the Premiership now. Before, I probably thought it was slow and not as organised as us. But now that you're playing in it, you know, you have a big pack every single week to deal with. You have the physical players, you have some world class players in this Premiership, and you have some really, really exciting attacking teams that are incredibly dangerous. And you know, they've sorted a lot of stuff out in this league over the past few seasons, and it's such a competitive league, incredible.
Do you think it's been a good move, Shawnee?
Yeah, I do, Lukey, to be honest, because I obviously you know, when you're in that bubble in Dublin and you've been there for so long, I didn't realise what was outside of that. Really, I knew there was home. I knew there was where I was comfortable. But outside of that, I didn't think that this was like over here, how friendly people are, how open people are, how well people want you to do, Irish people, the Irish community over here too, how great they are, like, with you. And I never would have expected that, to be honest, before I came over. And everyone, probably anyone that knew me, probably said, geez, you won't like it over there. But I actually really, really like it over here. And it's a great place to be.
Is it a frustration that, you know, you mentioned 2017 as your high point, that, you know, with the injuries you've you know, kind of suffered in the years since or past that, you didn't get to maybe go over to London Irish at the peak of your game, maybe in the 2017 form or before that, and kind of really take on the Premiership at your very best?
No, not really, to be honest. I don't have any kind of regret like that. But the only thing I would have loved to have done was, even though it was a disaster for Ireland, would have been that 2019 World Cup. That was the big one for me as such. I probably knew after that that they were going to wash their hands at me, maybe. But I was hoping, you know, that my hip would get there, but it didn't. But that was probably because 2015, the World Cup ended on a bit of a sour note for me. I was like, I really, really wanted to put my hand up and go, right, here we are again now, and bring the team to another level. But no, I've no real, like, I played some really good rugby over here at times. Obviously my body can't do what it used to do, but I've been really pleased with my effectiveness in games and how I'm trucking in games and my work in games and what I'm getting through, to be fair, and more so this season than the last two. I've had a few bits and pieces, obviously. It was a very unknown thing with the hip, and I had a few calf issues on my other side and bits and pieces like that. So finally we got the right balance this year, and I've been available for the majority of games. I had COVID once, which kept me out of one or two, but that was it really.
And like, how is the body kind of in, as you look to the end of the career? Like, is it, you know, is it, have you recovered from that hip problem you had for a few years? Like, are you leaving the game in a good physical state as well?
Yeah, I actually am, believe it or not. I think everyone, I know it takes me a while to get strapped up for games now, but like, I actually feel really good. I feel strong. I feel quick. That was the thing some of the lads here were saying to me, why don't you just play one more year? Like, and I was like, no. I was like, I know when my time is up. And if I do like get home, or if I did want to play a bit of like club rugby somewhere, like I'd still well be able to do that, obviously. And that's probably a thing that I will do regardless of where I am, because I just want to be out in the rough and tumble.
Imagine trucking up for your Sunday game and your man showing up for Tullow. Like, you'd be like, and there's no doubt you'll be like me, you'll stick another 10 kilos on that rig. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm telling you.
Luke, you'd be horrified
as the
I'll be down to 100 kilos. I'm 110 at
the minute. I'm ever new. Honestly, I'd be horrified if I was the opposition 10 and Shawnee showed up for a little Sunday game. Like, could you imagine? It'd be miserable. Like, we'd just leave him alone. Just go coaching or something, would you?
I'd probably actually play in the backs, would you believe? At that level, I'd probably play 12 or
like Scott Gibbs in his head.
Yeah.
What a lovely thought.
So Sean, you mentioned there you don't have any regrets. So there's no one game that you'd like to have back, no one kind of one match that you'd love to replay and maybe change the result.
There's only one game I've ever thought about, and that's that 2015 World Cup game against Argentina, the one I was banned for. I genuinely believed like so much that I was, if I was on the field that day, we would have got over the line. Lukey actually scored a cracker in the second half in that game, but we were down four or five of our starters before they started that game. Paulie, Johnny, I think Pete. I was banned. I don't know who else was missing. There was someone else missing. But
Jared Payne was missing too.
Jared Payne, yeah. And he was on. He was having a great time of it at the time. So
he's a big player for us, yeah.
Yeah, that was that's the one game I'd love to go back and be available for. But other than that, no regrets other than that, thankfully.
Well, Sean, congratulations on a great career. We really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much, lads.
Well, we're delighted to be joined by Keane Tracy to discuss all the latest news. Keane, how are you?
All good, lads. Busy day. How are you getting on?
Yeah, very busy day, and after a busy weekend as well. We might as well start with some of the news today. Graeme Rowntree confirmed as Munster head coach. It's funny, we had Rudd on last week, and that was one of the big talking points we were going over, is when will Munster actually announce their coach? It was looking like it was going to be Graeme Rowntree, and I think anyone who saw the Exeter game and saw the halftime clip of him kind of reading the riot act to the players while Johan van Graan sat off to the right or the left of him, you know, might have put two and two together and thought he was the right man for the job, or certainly would be appointed soon enough. Well, you know, what do you make of the news?
Yeah, I think it's just amazing it's taken so long, I think, to get to this point. I think it's long when expected that Graeme Rowntree was going to be the new head coach. I mean, he was up today for interviews. Quite interesting to listen to him. He admitted that the last few weeks had been consuming, that it hadn't been a distraction, but it had been consuming. Look, I mean, he threw his hat into the ring. He made no bones about it that he wanted to take over from van Graan. He's got the gig now, yeah. So it's exciting. Like, it's exciting in a way, but I would have concerns as well. Like, he's never been a head coach, which to me is a risk, albeit a calculated risk. Johan van Graan was never a head coach before he came in. Now, Rowntree has far more experience. I accept that. But I think it's very important that Munster get the right assistance in with him for such an experienced head coach. So that process is still ongoing. No white smoke yet on who's going to be the attack coach and who's going to be the defense coach. So look, he's had a front row seat for, I would say, what's gone wrong under this current, you know, regime. So if you're to look at it positively, you would hope that because he's seen what went wrong, he knows what needs to be put right. So that would give me hope, would give me encouragement. But like I said, I just think he needs the right people around him, because if you were to bring in two or three like inexperienced coaches alongside him, I'm not sure that's the way to go forward either. So some big decisions still to be made, albeit they have the main man in place.
Yeah, Luke, you were saying earlier you thought it was a positive step. It's always funny when, you know, a club or a country hires from within a setup, you know, when maybe that setup isn't being very successful at the time. But it's worked out for a few, like, you know, Andy Farrell in Ireland, you know, I know there was some growing pains, but now I think it looks like it was a good appointment. Leo Cullen in Leinster, you know, when Matt O'Connor left, he came, he was the guy got promoted, and ultimately it worked out well there. So what are your thoughts on this one?
I'm positive on it because I just know him a little bit. You know, obviously he's a pretty hard-nosed player, comes from a great club up in Leicester, you know, great. I think he'll understand a place like Munster, and I think he'll really enjoy it. Being the top guy, I think he's really enjoyed his time there so far. I mean, it seemed to me like his family have settled in really well. So I think all of that side of things are very easy to take care of. And then you're down to the quality of coach that he is. And look, the bit that I saw of him, I mean, I suppose you alluded to it earlier on, he's got an excellent CV. Like, he's been in lots of great, been around lots of great coaches, loads of experience. I thought he seemed really good. Any of the tiny bits of contact that I had with him, obviously completely different areas of coaching. But I think he's also a really good guy. I think he'll have, I kind of tweeted about it earlier on, just when I saw the news, saying, I think his biggest challenge is going to be picking the right guys. And I'm saying that because it seems like such an obvious statement, but what I mean by it is that I think whoever he sits in front of, I think they'll want to work with him. I do. That's my vibe from him. I always think he's a real positive guy. You know, I think he's tough. I'd say he works very hard. I think he'd be enjoyable to be around on a daily basis. And I think he's a winner too. Like, you know, you forget that. I know there hasn't been a great tenure under at Munster so far, but look, he hasn't been the head guy. I think, he said it himself, he feels like the time is right. And I'd probably think that too, looking at his career. I think he could go on to be a brilliant coach, or I suppose manager, if you like, you know, the top guy at our head coach at a club. Just got to pick astutely now and make sure he picks someone that tailors to the abilities that this squad will have. I also think as well, just on an aside, I don't always like this, but I do think it is important that Munster recruit some really good, you know, really good one or two players to supplement what they have. I think there's lots of good young quality there. But I think he's the kind of person who could entice some really big time players there. So I hope the IRFU give him a little bit of tether to do that, because I think if he does that, he can turn things around pretty good. Alongside, as I said, the key bit, who he picks to coach alongside him. I think he'll be able to get whoever he wants. He just needs to want the right guys. So that's the challenge for him.
Keane, just one last thing on Roundtree before we maybe move on to some of the weekend talking points. And I remember talking to you about, you know, what was he like to deal with at press conferences? Because in my head, I maybe had a kind of a Richard Cocker-esque kind of character, you know, very fiery, very combative. And you kind of painted a completely different picture and said he's actually very different.
Did I? I don't remember that conversation. He's quite...
Maybe it was Rod.
Yeah, like, the only reason I'm saying that is because he's quite direct and short. Like, he kind of gets straight to the point. There's no kind of faff or fluffing around issues. Like, if he doesn't really want to answer a question, he doesn't really go for it. So, like, you know, that's grand when you're the forwards coach, but when he's going to be in the hot seat, that brings around different pressure. And just to touch on one or two of the points that Luke made, I think there's no doubting his popularity amongst Munster squad. If you speak to any of them, they'll tell you that, and like, and how well he's settled. But, and you touched on, Will, the clip, and it was really interesting. I agree with you to see it, like, how much we could read into a short clip, I don't know, but it was still really interesting to see kind of Van Grand just staring up at him as he was reading the riot act. But if there's one thing that Munster, I don't think, lack, even now, it's passion, and it's that fight, the kind of the old cliches that you can roll out. So it's more about the tactical nous. And that is one thing we're not sure what Graham Rowntree's like head coach philosophy is going to be. I think, you know, from seeing him, the teams he's coached, the forwards, that they're going to have a hard nose, they're going to have a hard edge. But I think Munster are crying out for more creativity, more of a spark. So they, it really can't be a continuation of what we've seen over the last couple of years. There has to be some new ideas, some new way of thinking, some more creative backline play. And while, okay, that's not going to be directly his remit, it kind of goes back to the point that both myself and Luke are making, that it's really important that whoever they bring in, and also it's worth pointing out that, like, Munster and Graham Rowntree don't have carte blanche here to bring in whoever he wants. Like, it's an IRFU ultimately decision, and David Nusafora is all over this as well. So the buck kind of will stop there. So look, we've seen David Nusafora dip into his contact books. Like, you think of someone like Andy Friend coming over. So it'll be interesting to see if they get a home, if they're keen to have a homegrown coach within that. There's a couple of guys out there, or else he could be looking left field. Like, really and truly, it's a terrible time to be looking for a top class attack coach and a top class defense coach this close to the World Cup. Like, you think of the amount of movement that's going to happen post next year's World Cup. So I think Munster are backed into a corner a little bit. I still think it's a very attractive job, despite the kind of the disappointments, I guess, over the last couple of years. When you look at the quality of young players coming through, it's definitely still an attractive job, but I just think it's not a great time to be looking for top class coaches.
Yeah, interestingly, I thought in the piece you followed earlier from his press conference, he mentioned that, you know, I think when he was doing the interview, he probably would have had a staff that he was maybe putting forward in that interview about, oh, this is maybe a guy I bring in for attack, or this is a guy for defense, or that's what I took from his comments anyway. So it will be interesting to see when that movement is made on who he might be bringing in, because as you say, it's an integral piece of the puzzle. Luke, you know, another bit of news today was the Jameson Gibson-Park has been cited for that tackle against Connacht last Friday night. Obviously, was one of the major talking points of that Leinster-Connacht game, which was an absolutely cracking game. It really got the weekend off, could do a great start, and hopefully we have more of the same on Friday. But, you know, what did you make of that moment at the time? Like, was it a red card in your opinion? Like, it was a really divisive one, just even seeing people reacting on social media.
Yeah, I suppose there's two parts of it. You probably lean towards a yes, red card, you know, just in the current climate. And then I'm not so sure on the actual collision itself. You know, when you're kind of thinking on the actual merits of the thing itself, was it actually a red card? I'm kind of unsure on that. And based on those two kind of ways of thinking about it, I'm probably leaning more towards a red card. And look, he's been cited subsequently. So someone saw something there that they thought, I'm not sure they dealt with that adequately at the time. And I think there's something to answer for there. So I think he was a bit lucky. You know, and it was interesting, obviously, I'm still finding it amazing that people are finding themselves in these kind of positions. You know, I think you've got to be so, so careful. It can really change a game. Like, if he didn't come back on, I think Leinster might well have lost that. I think it was really in the balance for a period. And I think coming back to 15 men, it was actually really what settled them. I know there was a few big moments, like the scrum and that, you know, there were moments that Leinster kind of, I thought lifted them and brought them back, and, you know, got them back to kind of winning the game, put them in that position. But I think the 15 was what consolidated all that and allowed Leinster to push on and win the game. I think not comfortably, but definitely I think they were the better team over the 80 minutes. That was the bit that brought the teams closer together, in my opinion. And I think to tie in with that, you see the Ulster collision. I know it's a different collision, but still, you know, you just got to be so careful now. I mean, you think of a lot, like so many of the big games there were decided by these collisions. And, you know, I think, do you know what was good to see? I think the Jimmy O'Brien one on the line, I was glad to see. That was a bit of common sense, in my opinion. Like, there was no malice towards the neck or the head on that one. He did, of course, hit just above the shoulder blade. But I think the referee was a real strong decision. And I thought it was the right one, because someone diving towards the line like that, I thought that was a bit of common sense, and no one was hurt from the collision, and he wasn't attacking the head as such. It was just above the shoulder, but it was almost at a kind of a, it was at a different angle than something that would be kind of dangerous. So I think there was good, but I think people have to be so careful is the real overarching point that I'm trying to get to, because so many big games are decided by these decisions now, Will, and I'm interested to get Keane's opinion on the collision itself. But it amazes me, you know, how, you know, like for the Toulouse one particularly, I mean, getting in under, like not getting in the air and being in the landing zone or in that general area, like you must feel like, I have to think you're a stupid player if you don't feel like, oh, this is a real risk here if I'm not in the air. Do you know that kind of way? So yeah, look, that was probably my thoughts on that collision. Well, I'm sure Connacht would be very, very disappointed that there was no red.
Yeah, Keane, it's an interesting kind of weekend for those kind of incidents, considering that it was an article, I think it was in the Telegraph, that where rugby are interested now to trial this 20-minute red card more kind of across the game. I know it was briefly in the Pro 14, was it? I think during the Rainbow Cup, if I'm not... Maybe I was just blanked the Rainbow Cup out of my head because I didn't particularly enjoy it. But like, what do you make of that piece of it as well? You know, in the context of what Luke was saying about how often we have seen it, I did find it kind of funny in that article that one of the incidents they cited was the Charlie Ewell's tackle, which for me, like, was a fairly cut and dried red. I don't think that's really what the rule was intended to be brought in for. But maybe a grey area where, you know, a Gibson Park one, would that be maybe a 20-minute red card? Then you have your more serious ones that are definitely a Stonewall red. Where do you kind of stand on that part in the relation to the weekend?
I hate the idea of the 20-minute red card. I absolutely hate it. I think it's such an interesting topic of this conversation, even around red cards in general, because like my sense of it, and I was actually speaking to a coach off record about this recently, and he was in favour of bringing in the 20-minute red card. But I don't know, my sense of it is from talking to people who are in the game, and I'm talking about players and coaches, is that people from the outside looking in have a very different view unless you have skin in the game. I just think, yeah, head contact, while, you know, there wasn't any malice in Gibson Park's part, I just think it was a red card. But like you have Andy Friend afterwards saying that he didn't think it was a red card, but he also then mentioned that he didn't think Tom Davies was a red card a couple of weeks earlier, which like was a Stonewall red card for me. So look, I think it's difficult when you're listening to coaches and players talk about this because, I don't know, their livelihoods depend on it. You know what I mean? So from the outside looking in, it's easier, I think, to be more impartial. And I just hate that red card, the 20-minute the law trial that they're using. I think it's interesting like that it's still going on in Super Rugby. And like you'll say, Ireland are going out to New Zealand this summer and all the Kiwi players have been trialing this law. But like, even like Luke mentioned the red card for Toulouse at the weekend. But like, even you look at Stade Francais hooker Tolu Latu, who's after getting an 11-week ban today. Like, if you commit something like an act of foul play that's so, so stupid and so dumb, you deserve to be sent off and your team deserves to be punished for your reckless stupidity. Now, I know what you're saying, Will, in terms of it was a little bit different to Gibson Parks because it is probably more of a grey area. But I think once if you're going down that route of, you know, trying to have different rules for different thing, I think it gets way too complicated.
Keane, like, so we already have that with like a yellow and a red card. Like, is there not, can we not trust referees to be able to discern between the incident you mentioned when the Stade Francais hooker just like, you know, flipped a guy who was jumping for the ball, or the Toulouse one, you know, which was quite reckless too. And then those other ones that are more, it's definitely not a yellow. It probably is a red in the letter of the law, but is there not room in the game for that? So we don't have games being ruined by incidents where there isn't a huge degree of danger, but it is still an illegal tackle. That's what I don't think anyone's really arguing that there shouldn't be any right cards, that it should always be 20 minutes and that no matter how severe a tackle is, it should be punished by this 20-minute red card. But I do think there is potentially room for that kind of middle ground area.
I don't know, but I just think there's enough ambiguity with these things anyway. Like, I feel like you're adding another layer of complexity to something that doesn't need it. Like, I mean, like, I'd be of the view that Charlie Ewell shouldn't be allowed to play until James Ryan is back playing. That's how I feel about those things. Like, that was a reckless shot on a guy. And it's going to cut. Like, our game is in danger with these. Like, I don't think people get how, like, the if that case goes ahead, I mean, like, do you lose your insurance carrier? Like, do people still play? Like, there's a whole portion of people who might have pre-existing injuries and they're kind of saying, well, like, I don't think I can play. If you lose your insurance carrier, like, you're in big, big trouble. Big, big trouble. I mean, and that's where we're at with the game, with these cases that are going ahead. And like, even I think we've all made a decision that we're not going to allow this stuff to go ahead. I think you just throw the book at these guys. You just say, sorry, you ruined the game. You cost your team the game. That's it. That's how big making these stupid decisions, that's the impact. That's how, and I think this, so like, diluting that further, I think is really dangerous. Sorry to interrupt you again, but that really pisses me off. That the 20-minute red card thing is, really, really silly. Like, we're on a journey to protect the game. We're going to have these games that are ruined. I think we need to accept that. But we're doing that with the bigger picture in mind of player safety, player welfare. And let's face it, we want people to continue sending their kids to play this game. And we want people, you know, we want them to still be able to play it and still be have players insured. You know, I think if we, you know, there'll be more and more cases if we don't protect guys. And I just think, you know, it's so dangerous diluting this thing further. We're on a journey now. We need to accept there's going to be a few bad decisions and a few games ruined, I think. That's what I think.
Even the point that I made about, you know, the middle ground area, I didn't get any indication from that piece I read that that was what they were even thinking about. It seemed the piece I read that it would just be a 20-minute red card generally, like as in
crazy,
you know,
that's
which
crazy.
That is, yeah.
You could take out like an unbelievable player in the opposition team, you know, and you know you're back on 20 minutes or whoever, someone else comes on. I think that's crazy. Open up a whole other world of gamesmanship. I don't know. Well, what do you exactly think, Ian? Sorry, like, I know, no, I put across you there. I'm sure you're passionate about this too.
No, spot on. Like, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying, and I already think that we have a problem in the game apart from the headshots of like too much discussion around decisions during the game, dragging it on. And then, like, just to Will's point, if there was a middle ground, I just think it creates, yeah, just even more hassle and delays games longer. Because I think even from a supporter's point of view and from a journalist's point of view, like, it's very hard to understand some of the disciplinary decisions that are made. Like, the one that sticks in my mind most recently is Bismarck Duplessis, his like spear flip tackle on Alex Kendallen a few weeks ago. Like, that he should have had the book thrown at him for a tackle like that. Like, he easily could have broken Alex Kendallen's neck, career over, and could potentially have been even worse. And that's not being over dramatic really about it. It was a shocking act of foul play, and he gets it. What was it, a 3-week ban, 4-week ban or something? Like, I couldn't agree with Luke more. I think if you want to deter these acts of foul play, I think you've got to hand out longer bans. That's why I was happy to see Latu get an 11-week ban. Now, he still got 1 week shaved off for saying that, you know, he was guilty and he was sorry and stuff. But to me, you should nearly get another week for that if you're saying that it was a red card. So I just think the process of the disciplinary hearings is so hard to get your head around from the outside looking in. And like, there's no consistency in it whatsoever either. So I think that's an issue as well. And if you were to bring in, like you were saying, Will, a kind of a middle ground, I just think it complicates things further. So I really hope that 20-minute red card never comes into the game here properly.
I think our middle ground as well is covered well enough with the Gibson Park thing. So for example, he got a yellow card in the game because referee wasn't 100% sure on a few things about it, and he wasn't comfortable, you know, giving it a red card based on what he saw. I think he was probably wrong, but leaving that aside, we now have an adjudication process after the fact where he might get a ban and be unable to play. And I think that is our red card 20 minutes. Do you know what I mean? That is our middle ground between the yellow and the red, is that if the ban isn't, or sorry, if the foul play and the resulting refereeing decision isn't deemed to be enough, we have a process afterwards where we ping guys for things like that. And I think that covers it, Will. I really believe a yellow and a red is enough. Like, you end up in the black card world then. Like, do we want to be there? Like, has that really solved much? I don't think it has in Gaelic football and hurling, like, for me anyway. I think
to play devil's advocate in that, Luke, I suppose Connacht will have a chance this weekend because it's unusual in that it's the second leg. But if an opposition team, you know, doesn't get the benefit of the red card, they would argue then it's no good to us. You know what I mean? The retrospective punishment. It's a little bit different this week, but I know the point you're making.
Like, does the red card, so for example, do you say to the Gibson Park team, say, you know what, I'm not sure, it's not a red for the full game, it's a red for 20 minutes. Like, that's a really difficult. I mean, or else you're saying it's red card for 20 minutes for everything. But like, that's wrong. That has to be wrong in my mind. But it's whether you go, I think that's on the upper end of a yellow card, it's not quite a red for the full thing. But you're like, I don't know. Like, I mean,
but how do you consider,
like, then you're bringing in things like, oh, well, how much of the game is left? Do you know what I mean? Like, what if there's 10 minutes in the game left? Do you know what I mean? Like, that, all those things come into play. And you're kind of saying, well, does the referee have to decide, you know, what's appropriate here? I don't know. That seems to me like it's an even more difficult process to kind of untangle in figuring out if this is some, the right thing to bring into the game. I think it looks like a crazy thing to bring in.
Well, it's a very hard sell, especially when they're, you know, player safety is such a big topic. It's for me, even from a PR perspective, putting aside what you think about whether it should be brought in, to sell that when you're talking about player safety, that you are going to be letting players, you know, come back on or get replaced after 20 minutes, is they're not really compatible.
But even to see the amount of red cards that have been in Super Rugby this season has been crazy. And to think like that every time there is, after 20 minutes, you know, it they're back to 15. It's just, it baffles me, really, to be honest. And even the language around the Gibson Park one was interesting as well, which is, like, I think another issue. Like, what was it the referee said that Kieran Marmion had accepted? Like, yeah. I don't know. Like I know it's a... The referee is put on the spot and the cameras are on him and he's mic'd up and stuff. But I just think the language around the process as well doesn't help, I think, from, you know, a supporter's point of view in terms of trying to understand what's actually going on in the decision-making process. It's just all very sort of complicated. It'll be very interesting to see if Gibson Park gets banned. What we're recording Tuesday evening, it'll be very, very interesting. He'd be a loss to Leinster as well.
Yeah, Keenan, just before we finish up, I quickly, just on the last 16 first legs as a whole, like, how did you find it went? I know we're only halfway through, so we don't really know until the end if it already came together, but did you notice any kind of difference or anything jumping out at you that you found? Did it feel different, I mean, to a regular knockout round?
I suppose it did, really, like, knowing that you had, you know, teams, like, had a second chance, really. Like, I think... On a principle and on a whole, I wasn't a huge fan of them because I'd be more of a traditionalist. I just think the amount of tweaking with the competition has been really frustrating over the last few years, particularly the pool stages. But I have to say, like, when you looked at the fixtures beforehand, they all looked like cracking ties. And to be honest, most of them were. And like pretty much all of them were in the balance this weekend. So it is interesting. I thought even like it was, you know... You had Toulouse last weekend against Ulster, like, you know, going for broke at the end of the game, like, even though they knew they had a second shot this weekend, is interesting. I think I'd be very interested to see, like, someone like Leinster, who have so many, you know, set-piece moves in their playbook, like, were they keeping stuff back for this week, or did teams kind of go for broke last week? I think that's one of the most fascinating elements of this weekend. I think, like, a tie like Munster-Exeter, I'd say you're going to see a repeat of, you know, what you saw in Sandy Park. Two teams just slugging it out, whereas I'm fascinated to see if, like I said, Leinster have kept something in reserve. So, yeah, I wasn't a big fan of it just because I prefer the old format, but I'm really looking forward to pretty much all the second legs.
Great stuff, Keane. Thanks so much for joining us.
Cheers, lads.
That's all we have time for on the Left Wing this week. We'll be back next week with another podcast. And in the meantime, you could subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening. And goodbye.